Okay, if you'll all take your seats, we'll start with our next presentation. For our next presentation, we're extremely pleased to have one of the greatest materials companies in the space and in the world, 3M. Now, the company has industry-leading returns and margins. They have some of the strongest and innovative technology platforms, with platforms as examples in filtration, in LCD films, and in nanotechnology, just to name a few. Now, that, along with a new growth initiative at the company, may not only accelerate the growth, but also may accelerate the margins going forward, at least in our opinion, and push them even higher above these extremely high levels already. So we think it's a pretty interesting story at this point. Now, speaking for 3M, we're very pleased to have the Chairman, President, and CEO, George Buckley. And George came to 3M in 2005 as to take on the CEO role. Prior to that, he had been running Brunswick Corp, which a lot of you may know him from, as well as having been the president at Emerson's Electric Motors and Auto Precision Motors business. With that, why don't I turn it over to Mr. Buckley so you can hear about the opportunities at 3M.
Thank you, John. Is the mic on? I don't think so. Can you hear me? No? Yep, it's okay. All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome to New York. Welcome to the conference here. Let's try to tell you a little bit about 3M. Got my mandatory Miranda warning for you that nobody ever reads, and Matt had actually talked about putting something strange in here just to see anybody ever caught it, but we passed on that opportunity. Recent performance, we had a really great first and a great second quarter, and as we can see here from the slides, sales were up to $6.1 billion, which was 11.8% top-line growth if we take out the pharma business that we sold last year. On EPS, $1.23, up 17.1%, but if we took out the impact of the pharma business we sold, EPS would have been up 23%. So pretty spectacular performance in the second quarter. Here's the sales recap, and you see the yellow highlighted line, what was going on here. A grand total 9.3% worldwide growth, 6.2% of that in the United States, and 11.3% international. So great international growth, and not bad growth in the U.S., although clearly the U.S. is growing significantly slower than what we see internationally. But nevertheless, good sort of broad-based sales performance. On the balance sheet, some nice stuff on the bottom here. Large amount of share repurchases in the first quarter and second quarter of 2007. We purchased over $2 billion of shares back, and we're in there supporting the stock even in some fairly good times. So balance sheet remains strong, good cash flow, $866 million in the second quarter. So lots of choices for 3M in terms of what we do with the money, where we make our investments, and what we do going forward. But in the end, all of this is nice. Taking the model and optimizing it is very good, but really the best value creation opportunity comes in our company and in many companies from driving growth. So we're going to talk about that. We've done a lot of stuff to underpin it. We think there's great opportunities both in value creation from growth. This is a Gordon growth model down on the right-hand side that we showed some time ago. And anybody that's familiar with our model knows there are huge opportunities in tax rate, which is my little sort of importer slide up here on the right-hand side. But the fundamental principles that we have are to defend the excellent margins we have, defend our premium returns. Thank you. I didn't realize the talk was going to be that short. Defend our premium returns, reemphasize innovation. I mean, this is where 3M was born and raised. This is a company that's known for its innovation, for its focus on this as a means of providing new platforms for growth. And we've kind of gotten a little bit behind on that. I'm going to show you a slide on that in just a while. And we've begun to reinvest in that because we think it's the real taproot of growth for our company for the future. Got a lot of central overhead, like a lot of companies of our age, that got kind of built over the years. And it was Pat Campbell, our CFO's idea some few years back. Just let's hold that constant. We've been getting good margin improvement from just holding our central costs level. And there's a lot more mileage in that, so we will do that too. And then when you add share buybacks and lower taxes and some supply chain stuff I'm going to speak about in just a minute, I think you have a great opportunity here to invest in one of the great companies of America. On top of that, the base that we have, I didn't list them all, I won't list them all, but we have some absolutely magnificent enduring franchises. The kind of things, the category-defining brands that that 3M has. I mean, what do you do if you go to an office supply store and say, well, can I have some, you know, that kind of sticky tape with this clear with the stuff on the back? You use the word Scotch tape. What about things that you post on a board? You call them post-it notes. You have no other word for them. We have endless, maybe, I don't know, perhaps 20 of these enduring franchises in 3M that just provide this fabulous base for the company, both in presence in the marketplace and the ability to leverage our technologies. Here's the plan essentials. Really boils down to these three things. Higher growth. This is the fundamental mission that we have. It's what we see as our success criteria for the future. Rebuilding R&D to underpin that, and financing the growth, because obviously growth comes at a cost, both in expense and in some cases working capital. But financing the growth through some supply chain reengineering, and getting back to this sort of entrepreneurial and responsive culture that made 3M great. These are our primary plan essentials, our primary mission. Here's how we go about it. It's a chart, really, that shows you the balance that any great company. We're a manufacturing company. Yes, of course, we're a marketing company. Yes, of course, we're a technology company. But we are fundamentally a manufacturing company. And you can go after this growth issue. We talk about at the core about adjacencies. But you must not leave this behind you. You've got to focus on making sure the factories run well, the logistics are well organized, the purchasing is done well, so you can underpin and provide a foundation to do this with money that's created from that. So the two things, growth and operational excellence, have to go hand in hand. Now, the job of a CEO is to take what is a complex story and try to make it seem like a simple story, although not so simple that it's not believable and doesn't have substance. And here's my analogy for that. See my little photograph of a pipeline down here in the bottom right-hand corner? And so let's think about growth as a pipeline. And what we have to do as a company in terms of servicing our customers is we've got to work the inputs, the outputs, and then make sure the pipe is not too torturous and clear of obstruction. This is how we go about doing it. At the sending end of the pipe, it's essentially about inventing and developing more products and pushing those up the pipe. But of course, that doesn't work unless they got someplace to go at the other end of the pipe. But in this first thing, this is about getting our scientists and engineers back in the business of inventing more new products, revitalizing that part of our business. At the receiving end of the pipe, it's obviously to penetrate those markets better, to sell and market better. That's about feet on the street. In some secondary markets overseas, for example, it's about getting local brands that we use to penetrate that market. Kind of that becomes almost like a locomotive, and our global brands become the rolling stock on the train. The pipe itself, obviously, you want a large enough pipe to carry the product, and we had a lot of problems in this area. We had a lot of plants out of capacity. We weren't able to supply service our customers. They were unhappy. We were doing a lot of things that cost us dearly, expediting, air freight, and so on and so forth. But really, in the end, is not good. So we've been addressing the capacity issues, and obviously keep the pipe as short and simple as possible. You know, the best strategy, if you're in the power generation business, is a in-mine-head plant where you get the coal from the plant, make electricity there and then. We have a sort of similar notion on manufacturing. Manufacture close to the customers. And lastly, both literally and figuratively, you've got to stop the pipe leaking. In our case, it's about price giveaways, perhaps about sometimes giving rebates for things that people didn't earn, and those sorts of things. Being very disciplined in the administration of your policies in this area. So this is my model, simple model. It's something on a single slide that helps you think about what we're doing. So having learned all these things, we tailor-made a growth program for 3M that really did just these things. It was about rebuilding and extending the core. Why the core? Because if you want to invest someplace, the core is the place which is the lowest risk and gives you the fastest results. Now, you have to be a little careful as you go forward. You know, this is sort of stick to the knitting statement. And you've got to be careful that knitting is a growth business. So you don't want to be in the sort of the buggy whip business or going out of business because you only focus on the core. So you have to do something else. You've got to invest in the future. You've got to put money into R&D. You've got to put money in new products. Because if you don't invest in a future for yourself, somebody else is going to, and it will become their future instead of your future. And even in a place like 3M, we saw some of that kind of stuff happening. How do we go to pay for all of this sort of stuff? Well, getting our manufacturing footprint close to the customers, shortening our supply chains, and you'll see a slide in just a minute will give you an idea of how long some of these supply chains were. And going local, this is kind of almost like an old Unilever strategy, which is go local in brands, go local in technologies, go local in customization. That's the way that we're thinking about doing that. Yet even though you're rebuilding the core, you need to look at some new things. You need to sort of fishing some new ponds to make sure you don't get caught by the buggy whip thing. And lastly, greater emphasis on our international markets. This is going great for us. This has been, you saw earlier in the growth slides, 11% growth international, just really a real lift for our company. So great presence there. Here's a little visual of what I just said. Think about the core, growing the core, and there's a bunch of stuff you have to do over here on the left. I won't torture you by taking you through all of that. Using complementary acquisitions, building new businesses, EBOs, BTOs, all sorts of things that we use, and international. So just a little simple visual Y chart of our basic strategy. And in the core itself, I give you a little sort of graphic up here of where we typically play in the top. If you thought about these as good, better, or best, we typically play in the best part of the marketplace. But there are great opportunities. And by the way, usually 3M created these markets and has given this up to somebody else. And so we have to find ways to sensibly extend our core, build scale, in many cases use dual branding. There are many strategies for actually doing that, but thinking about thoughtfully extending the core from the top of the better down a little bit. Invent a new future, I mentioned earlier. And this one, build broad long-term competencies. If you think about our optical film business, when I wrote this originally, I was thinking about optical. And while we have many kinds of optical films, one of our most popular is what we call a micro-replicator film, which is a little bit like it's a film that we imprint optical lenses on. So if you think about when your grandmother used to make pastry, and she rolled out the pastry with a rolling pin, well, we have a pattern imprinted on the rolling pin. I'm sure the scientists will forgive me for my very low-grade description of what we do. And these are our micro-replicated films that we use. Now, the question is the value in that product brought through the optics or is it brought through the films? You know, if I use an analogy, maybe a bad one, if you bought melons in Texas and trucked them to New York, are you in the trucking business or are you in the truck business? Are you in the melon business or are you in the truck business? You're in the melon business. The value is brought through, in our case, through the optics, not necessarily through the films itself. So we are looking now to see where can we expand, where can we extend, broaden the base of this marketplace that leverages the competencies that we have in optics in new applications. So while this is, one could think about this for a film business, in reality, we're thinking about where do we take this yet further still. We've made great progress in 2007. Basically, we took the plan, and the plans are great, but we don't do planning by PowerPoint. We take our plans, and we are relentless. We systematically execute them. And we've had an 11% increase in R&D spending over 2006, and I think it was 6% over 2005. We've accelerated our international growth. We're up from 9 to maybe 11. We've made huge investments in our supply chain to try to shorten those chains and get the right kind of manufacturing in the right place. 28% increase in capital expenditure over 2006, and I think we were about 35 or 40 over the year previously. So we've been stepping ahead, and the results are being delivered. We have a new respirator facility in Korea opened, a new optical facility in Poland opened, a new tape facility in Canada, a new filtrate plant in Mexico as well, and an industrial tape facility in China. And we will have, by the end of the year, 10 plants in China, up from 6 just a year ago. But even then, it's still not enough for the demand that we see in that location. Seed further growth in the core via acquisitions. We've done 13 year-to-date in 2007. We did 18 last year. All nice little great bolt-ons that strengthened the core, extended the core in some cases. And it's been so far a very powerful strategy for us. Here's what it's shown. You know, we ourselves the question, is it working? Well, in the 2003-2005 period, we had organic growth 4.7, acquisitions 1.158 roll-up. In the last 2 years, we've moved the organic up almost by a point, and the acquisitions, we've more than doubled them, so we're 8 now instead of 5.8. So the growth program appears to be gathering momentum. And, you know, what nearly always happens is this will accelerate. This is, I don't want to say that this is easy to do, but this is a function by how many deals you're prepared to do. But this is the real indicator of the real strength, the underlying strength of the company, in my view. And by the way, we've done this with oil and housing headwinds and a slowing GDP in U.S. and in some regions of Asia. And here's where the numbers are on R&D. As one of my colleagues at work would say, we've been putting our money where our mouth is. We've been talking about this, but we've actually been doing it. And on R&D investment, the 05 to 06 change is 20%. On CapEx, the 05 to 06 change is 24. And we've actually been doing this very vigorously. And people are seeing it now. Now, here's where we started. You know, a lot of people ask George, well, you know, what the heck happened? There's a chart here. I've shown it, I think, at one, maybe two, previous investor meetings, and what we've got here is a chart that shows in solid blue our sustaining capital spending over the period 1997 to 2006, and that's just to keep the lights on, repair the roofs, car parks. It's just routine maintenance and upgrades. The green is strategic, which is building new labs for us. The yellow was growth investments in the core. And red was our investments in primarily in optical films. And you can see what began to happen in 02. You know, we cut growth capital here. You can see it down to roughly 100 million or so, less than that, 60. Almost nothing in 03 and nothing in 04. So for 3 years, we had almost no investments in growth in the core of 3M. And this is what we saw. And we've tried to accelerate that now. The problem though here, you know, when you invest in growth, which is primarily capacity, you may have 2 years from the time you make that investment before you actually realize the capacity. So you don't actually see the benefit investments made in this year really coming on stream until this year, until 07. So you get this lag. So once you get behind, of course, you've got a lot of problems trying to catch up, and we did. 53% decline in capital spending in this particular period of time. And essentially 100 in the core. A lot of people, you know, get concerned about acquisitions. You know, why do you need to do so many acquisitions? You know, acquisitions are challenging. They're nearly always worse when you buy them than you thought from the outside. And I think there's an element of truth in that, although not in all cases. But so it's not really just about bulking up. It is about strengthening the base of your business by filling in white spaces. You know, customers, let's pick on General Motors for a moment. If you go back 25 years in General Motors, they would have had 150,000 suppliers. But they cannot compete in today's world by only having 150,000 suppliers. They have got to find a way to collapse that and get suppliers that can help them with innovation, speeding up the process. And so what happens is they collapse those down to a few thousand today who can bring broad-based competencies, broad-based help to support them. And so you have to be one of those kind of suppliers. You must have a relatively broad product base to help your customers, the OEM ones in particular. So it's very important. Acquisitions can help you fill in the product portfolio very quickly, faster even than R&D when you get a little bit behind. They may facilitate growth through entry into a new market, penetrating, say, a new country that you don't have presence in, and help you pull through some of the other capabilities you have. They may provide a key new technology like the digital dentistry that we bought last year. Or in some cases, if you don't want to wait the 2 years to get capacity, if you can find the right kind of company, buy that company. If they've got excess capacity, you can bring it to account. So They do lots of different things for you than just adding bulk. Here's where we were on acquisitions. We did 4 in 05. We did 18 last year. We'll do somewhere around 20 this year. So again, doing very, very well. And what we've been adding is we've been adding companies that are accretive to 3M's average growth rate. So if you want to provide growth, you really have only three choices. If you're in a 3% market and you want to grow at 6, you've got to try to find a way to create an underlying market that grows at 6. Otherwise, you'll eventually saturate and run out of space. Alternatively, provide a new market, whether it's a geographic market, perhaps going into the better category from best, or you've got to point your resources at markets that are growing higher. So this is pointing our resources at markets that are higher. This is what we've done, and fortunately, these, and by design, are doing very well for us in this regard. International, we all know it's going great. Huge growth in China, huge growth in India, huge growth in Russia, huge growth in Poland. But we're seeing some other emerging markets now, Kazakhstan, Ukraine, the Gulf, Vietnam, Indonesia, as a sort of a new brick for us. It's the next level of our international investments. And typically these are growing at 2 to 3x, sometimes in some cases 4 and 5 times what we're seeing growth in the U.S. So more emphasis on international as we go forward. This is 3M's network. I mean, when you look at a company our size, it's a big company, but this network is absolutely fabulous. When we get great new products, I mean, it goes out into this network. This is how we really, really leverage the growth. You know, I know this is a chart for you with lots of sort of names and lots of arrows and lots of places on it, but this is the heartland of 3M. This is one of the things that makes 3M one of the great companies in terms of international growth. It's a fabulous capability. And all credit due to our forebears that had the wisdom to put this kind of network in place. So here's what our international sales growth looks like as a consequence of that. And you can see basically the business has doubled since 1998. And we expect this kind of trajectory in our forecasting is going to continue. So very, very pleasing and good to see this. Let's talk a little bit about operational excellence. Here's some challenges we have. If you take a look at the fourth quarter of 06 and the first quarter of 07, our sales growth was 457 in 06 in the fourth quarter. Our working capital was 557. In the first quarter of 07, 342 incremental sales year over year, working capital 575. This is not a good idea. And the reason why this happens is because we have massive sales growth overseas, slow growth in the United States, not a lot of manufacturing, relatively speaking, overseas, and most of that manufacturing in the U.S. So you get these supply chains get stretched out, and then you get into a situation where your receivable cycle is longer in these overseas markets, so your order-to-cash cycle just gets long. The only way you solve that problem is you've got to get manufacturing either close to the customer or you sort out the circuitous routes that you have in your supply chain. That's what we're doing, and that's how we pay for some of the growth. Let me give you an example here. The average time to traverse the global supply chain in 3M is 125 days. It often has multiple hops, backward and forward across continents, and it's very much the norm. So this structure that we have in 3M drives inventory and working capital usage, and in some cases, lower store rates as well. And there's lots of things I could talk about on this, but you can imagine all of the entropy costs that go along with this kind of structure. And so we're in the business of changing that structure. Now, let me just sort of give you an example in my little Rubik's Cube here. If you think of the manufacturing of a 3M product, I've actually presented this at least at one investor conference before because people really don't understand what happens inside 3M. If you're a person trying to start a new business, we won't necessarily allocate you your own manufacturing capacity. We'll say, well, look, we can do manufacturing process one at plant A, and that is owned by six people. So you get to sort of take a little bit of capacity. You're the red guy at this particular plant. Well, we don't want to put all the capacity there, so we let you do the next manufacturing process at another plant. Now, this plant might be in Wisconsin. This plant might be in Alabama. This next one might be in France. And this next one might be in Japan. and this distribution center might be in the United States. This is how we shunt stuff around. It's the reason why those supply chains are so long and why the working capital usage is what it is. And in terms of forecasting, if you can think about how you forecast the overhead recovery in this plant when you are impacted by all of these other businesses around here, some of whom may be doing well, some of whom may be doing badly, the forecasting challenge that comes from this kind of structure is very, very difficult. And a lot of people say, well, why the heck did you do this, George? This was fine when most of our sales were in the United States, when transportation was cheap, when customers would carry inventory, when we had the capacity to make inventory, and when we had the intellectual property where the customers had no choice. Those days are, I won't say long gone, but have been gone long enough. So this is what we're actually trying to do in streamlining the supply chain. Dissolve that, and we're trying to make one-piece floor plants where instead of shunting stuff from place to place to place, we have it all in one place. And here's the my little animation. This is how our system works. Stuff goes from one plant to another plant to another plant, sometimes as many as seven plants before it will eventually get to a distribution center. And you can see all the queuing that takes place in these systems. Whereas what we're now doing, where we're restructuring this, is this. Raw material into a focus factory, out, sometimes directly to the customer, sometimes to a focus factory. And here's where we are actually doing it. This is the actual physical building. This is not some sort of, as I said earlier, planning by power plant. This is actually happening inside 3M. And here's the North American investments in various places, in Mexico, in USA, and Canada. And the investments in the USA, by the way, typically are bumping outside of a plant, and they're in businesses like safety and security, consumer and office, or in healthcare, things that are very strong in the United States. Overseas, here's the plants we're building. There are various stages of construction. Several of these are now open. And also we're building 18 plants at once. And we'll be done with this phase of our supply chain restructuring by about the end of next year. However, it's not only an international problem. But let me show you what happens here. Left-hand side of this chart, this is maintenance-free respirators, and we used to sell these, build these in Aberdeen, Valley, and Aycliffe, two plants in the U.S., one in the U.K. And in building the new plant in Korea, which supplies all of APAC, we have cut 13% of the miles out, 31 and 24, and of course that also translates into time. On laminating adhesives, same plant, 51% of the mileage eliminated. So money comes out, time comes out, working capital comes out, service levels go up. But it's not only a problem in international. This is a paint protection film that actually even still today is shunted across five plants. And the five-year benefits for a $7 million capital expenditure are service levels, lines on time moving from 96 to 99, lead time down from 150 to 45, inventory reduction of $4 million, material cost savings, because we were actually buying some of this stuff from the outside in services, $20 million, and freight savings of $2 million. This is just one example with just over a score of million of sales. And there are scores and scores of these in 3M that we're sorting out. Investments in technology, great exciting new technologies. Product invention, product innovation is still the heartland of 3M. And this is one example, digital model here, full arch digital model of teeth, so we can do orthodontics, braces, bridges, crowns, and so on and so forth, all off a simple digital model that's captured by video, not by some ionizing radiation like x-rays. Track and trace, just tremendous opportunity all over the place. Many spaces you can play in. We're kind of more focused in the hospital spaces, and we will see continued investments in this because we think this is multi-billion-dollar business in due course. Power transmission, another nice breakthrough opportunity for us. One of the great challenges in power transmission is getting rights of way. Well, 3M invented a cable here that we can put somewhere between two and three times the power down this cable that we can down a conventional cable. And the trick here is, of course, if you can't get rights of way, why would you not buy this? The only reason is if this is more costly than the conventional one, which it currently is today, and so we're working on science to break through the costs here, and once that's done, this is another business that could be a multi-billion dollar business if we can make maybe one more scientific breakthrough. More stuff in consumer, constantly doing this. And, you know, little simple things here. Now, these are wonderful products. Just give you a little example. You might wonder, where does all the waste go from optical films? Well, before I came to the company, it went to landfills. Now it goes into making these things, these packages. We can't reuse it on optical films, but we can recycle it for other means. This is actually a $12 million saving just on the packaging of that product in a full year, just for example. And that, I think, is it. So a little bit on 3M. Company's alive and well, doing well, driving for growth, and having a lot of fun doing it. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Any questions? Oh, yes.
You mentioned the sort of the realignment of your distribution, your internal distribution system. And I'm wondering, is that a what's the magnitude of the changes that you can create there? I mean, is it, you know, $2 million over 5 years or $1 billion in 2 years? Or, I mean, how much, how big and how much are we talking about there?
To be completely honest, it's a difficult number to calculate exactly. However, we have made our calculations. The scale of the change is around $1 billion. It's late hundreds of millions of dollars in 5 years on working capital, and it's hundreds of millions of dollars in cost in the same period of time. So big opportunities here, and it's, you know, you don't see the real impact of this kind of stuff just in those numbers. It's all of the entropy, all of the sort of disorder it takes out of the system, and the fact that you're there ready to serve with the customers, and we will get growth from that. That's absolutely clear to us. So it's the excess and obsolete that gets washed out because you're there with short cycle times, the inventory that gets driven out. So we're very pleased about this. Of course, it's a tough strategy to execute. It's a lot of work, but in the end, there's almost nothing but good can come from it. You know, you eat a little bit of extra capital usage in the early years, which is what we're seeing. But in the long run, it's going to be great. Yes, sir.
Have you disclosed a number, following up on that last question, have you disclosed a number about how many facilities you'll be closing or a percentage or absolute
term? No, we haven't actually done that because what we're hoping to do is to make the number relatively small because we still, the U.S. is the place where we generally speaking have more facilities than we need and to some degree Western Europe. But we have some growth in the U.S. It may not be as good as international. So we're trying to avoid as much of that as we can. But we have in the past year closed about 6 facilities, one in Canada, 2 in Italy, and 1 in Japan, and 2 in the U.S., Matt, 2 or 3 in the U.S. So we've been doing this quietly, absorbing it into the numbers to make sure that the structure that's left behind is not cluttered either, but it's clean going forward and clean looking backwards. Yes, sir.
I know this program is supposed to take a few more years to complete.
Yes,
once you're done with that, on a relative balance of international versus domestic assets or however you want to look at it, are you really going to be aligned in terms of where your sales are versus where your manufacturing base is, or will there still be some imbalance because you want to keep certain technologies local versus otherwise? How's that going to look?
It's a great question. We will be roughly balanced within 5 points of demand and supply in every market. However, there is one area, just because of the size of the physical assets that have gone in the ground, and that's in optical films, which will largely remain manufactured here, at least in the high technology areas, will remain manufactured here in the U.S. So with that kind of distortion, largely speaking, we will be balanced. And you are right. In our case, it's not only about IP. We have some know-how in our company that has, you know, the protection of which is long gone, that transform the way in which we manufacture things. And so we're very, very careful about how we protect that know-how. And in those cases like that, that will almost certainly remain in the U.S.
Georgia, a quick question on the CapEx. You had shown a slide up there that showed your maintenance CapEx, or roughly maintenance, and it's down a lot in the last 10 years. It's basically been flat for the last 3 to 5 years, and yet your footprint is at least 25% bigger, if not a good bit better than that. How do you keep the maintenance CapEx where it is, and what gives us some confidence that it's not going to just all of a sudden ratchet up because things have kind of been worn down?
Well, I mean, for now, John, most of the stuff that's going in there, of course, is new plants, so it doesn't need as much. It doesn't need new roofs, doesn't need new car parks. So I don't think there's any doubt, John, as a percent of sales, some of that will go up. But what we have tried to do is, as part and parcel, there's lots of stuff behind the scenes, you can imagine. We've tried to say, take facilities and stop building Taj Mahals, which was typically the 3M way, and try to find ways to build much more fit for purpose, less expensive facilities that don't need some of that high level of maintenance. But of course, that's still only incremental. But as long as we're getting the growth, John, to go along with it, and that's where we're making the investments, I think it's going to be fine in the end.
And then with regard to your comments on you want to get scientists back and engineers back in the idea of inventing again.
Yes, sir.
That was something that looked like before you came in, it had been kind of slowing down, if not basically stopped. How do you kind of reinvigorate a culture to actually do that? And what signs have you seen that you've actually had some success there in, say, the last year or two since you've been in?
Well, let me tell you why it happened. And people did what they did for reasons that they thought were right at the time. I mean, you have to give people credit. Intelligent people are trying to do the right thing at the right time. We put in Six Sigma into the lab environment, where we said, look, if we put Six Sigma in, we can get more control of the process, we'll get more stuff coming out. But the reality is that people forget is that R&D and creativity is a discontinuous process. It's a random process. And I have used this line a few times, so hopefully those who have heard it before will forgive me for repeating it. But Six Sigma does not belong in a discontinuous process. It was designed to bring repeatability to continuous processes, in manufacturing in particular. And if you get behind in R&D, you can't schedule yourself for 3 good ideas on Wednesday and 2 on Friday. That's not how it works. And what actually began to happen, John, it began to destroy the culture from the inside. It caused a lot of resentment amongst the scientists. We took away the 15% free time for them to sort of look at stuff on their own. And when I came, I nixed Six Sigma in the R&D. I gave them the 15% back. I have spoke endless times. There's hardly a week goes by, John, that I don't go on lab visits. There's hardly a week go by when I'm not talking to scientists, engineers, new product people. And candidly speaking, they absolutely love it. They love it that they got somebody at the head of the company that understands what they do and the contribution they make to the kind of the culture of 3M, to the fabulous company that I'm privileged to lead. And just as an indicator, we did an employee survey about, it's now 3 years ago, and we got reasonable approval ratings. To be honest with you, John, the top two box approval ratings were 70%. We did one now, it's about 3 months ago. The top two box approval ratings are 90. So we're back. I actually even got an email this morning, and this doesn't mean the same to you as it does to me, where I was elected to the 3M Tech Forum. For a guy like me, this is the ultimate test of acceptability now by the R&D community. And of course it takes time, John, for this then to build momentum, but the mood is there, and in fact now, what's happening is, okay, so the CEO is behind us, he backs us, he's giving the money. Oh, my word, we better deliver the products, haven't we? So it's really a joy to behold now, John. I'm really pleased about it.
Any other questions?
Thanks, everyone.
Sure,
you've been gracious. Thank you.